a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic.
So this is a guy named Ethan Millard who does the Nightside Project.
Never heard of him.
With Alex Curie, and you could podcast them on your favorite podcast platform. You guys did a little stint last summer.
Yeah, we did.
Together. It was like the band got back together.
Yeah.
Every night I would go hiking, walking, running, because everything was closed down during the pandemic. Uh-huh. And I had you guys too.
Yeah.
I was texting you guys a lot, and you were ignoring my texts. It was like I became that listener. I'm such a fan of that show. Such
Thank
an
you.
Honor, such a privilege to sit next to you for the last several hours of the Dave and Dejanovic show. Dave's back next week, but in the meantime, you're stuck with me. And we're talking about this Harvard psychologist. He listed like seven different things.
Yes.
And you brought this article to my attention.
I found it on CNBC. I read a lot of CNBC because, you know, I work in investing now. I invest people's money. So I keep up on the financial news. And so CNBC, I'm a regular visitor there. This is from Lisa Feldman Barrett. She's a neuroscientist, psychologist, and an author. And she wrote out these seven things. Do these seven things if you want to raise kids with flexible, resilient brains.
Okay.
Okay. So I thought, oh, great. Here's another article on how I blew it as a parent.
Because
sometimes, you know, my oldest son is...
You're still blowing it as a parent.
I know. My oldest son's got
time to blow it some more.
Well, I hope I have time to kind of repair some things, you know, because my oldest is 16.
Well, how bad of a parent are you?
I guess not that bad. I mean, my kids are all safe.
That's good. And you love them.
And you tell them you love them. I do. Yes, I do that.
You give them a hug.
But I read things like this and I just feel the inadequacy. So I wanted to share the inadequacy with
okay,
you.
Okay. So, And I go through the same self-doubt moments that you do and every other parent does. Like, am I doing this right? And the answer is no.
But it's okay.
There's no right way is what I'm going to say. Nobody gave me this child with a handbook.
Yeah, that's true. There's no handbook.
I think
a lot of parenting is instinctual, but setting that aside.
Reactionary okay. in my house.
Is it a lot of reactionary?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So this first one, be a gardener, not a carpenter. A carpenter carves wood into the shape that they want. Mm-hmm. A gardener will help things grow on their own by cultivating a fertile landscape.
Oh.
In other words, the difference between forcing your child to learn a specific instrument or creating an environment where they're eager to learn new things and they like music.
I forced my child to learn a specific instrument. It was the instrument.
I
forced all three of them to learn how to play the flute.
Really?
I grew up learning and loving to play the flute. And so I still have my flute from when I was in fifth grade when I started flute lessons. And I made them join the band. And it lasted about a year.
And was it a lot of just turmoil and trying
to
force them to do this and that?
It was like making my two older children play soccer. It's like nothing worse than making my two older kids try to play soccer other than trying to make them play the flute.
Yeah. It's hard to make your kids do things.
Yeah.
I've largely given up, which is why I suspect I could be a better parent. Not that it's Lord of the Flies at my house, but
it just sounds bad. Okay, what's the other thing I need to do?
Talk and read your child a lot. At even just a few months old, they're not going to understand the meanings of words, but their brains will still make use of them. That builds a neural foundation for later learning. So the more words they hear early on, then the greater that effect will be. They also have better vocabulary and reading comprehension.
Every night to my kids, all three kids, I read, and they got to pick the book.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I missed out on this part. because for those years, I was here with Alex every night, so I was rarely at home in the evening.
Yeah, so you're working a night shift. I had long days working for KSL TV and in news, and when I was on scene, a fire or there was something bad going on in the city, and I couldn't get home. There were nights I had to skip, but usually they had me make it up with two books.
Yeah.
And my son, he was notorious for picking the longest book with the most pages on the bookshelf.
Yeah.
You know, so
get you out, yeah.
Yeah, 50 pages to him, and then I'd go in and ask my 3-year-old to pick a book with like 5 pages.
Did you ever try that skipping pages?
They always. My kids are too smart for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're too street savvy for
that. I only
got
away with that like once.
Like, we're on page 2, and then, look at us, we're on page 22. Good night.
It's because kids memorize things quickly. They're like, no, I know there was another page in there.
We got to get through the rest of the list, and we only have a few minutes.
All right,
come on,
okay.
Ethan.
The next is to explain things. So it can be exhausting when your child is constantly asking why.
Oh, yeah.
But just taking the time to explain them, that explains things, that expands our world. Are you good at that?
No.
I'm actually pretty. That's something I'm pretty
better.
Good at.
You are?
I am.
How so? What do you do? Because I think a lot of my stuff turned into a lecture.
I just tell them. I just give them a take on it. How does this work? How does that work? I've looked up things a few times. But see, this is a secret weapon for me though, because I really love to talk. I don't know if you knew this about me. So that I've always done well with that. So next up, and this works well when they're tattling.
Okay.
Describe the activity, not the person. So if one of them whacks the other on the head, you don't call that person a bad boy. You don't say he's being a bad boy. You say what you did, this action was what was wrong.
Oh, okay. Wish I would have known that. I remember this time when my kids were really close in age, and my son and daughter were about 6 and 5 years old, and they were playing with balloons outside with helium in it. They were playing what they called out of... Balloon Man.
Okay.
It's out of a book that we were reading. And so anyway, they're outside playing and they fight over the balloons, and my daughter wins. And I think she lets like one of them go, and my son runs in and he tattles on his sister. And, instead of explaining the poor behavior, I actually took the balloons and stabbed him with a knife. and we laugh about it now.
But at the time, I
turned around. I was in the kitchen. And I'm like, well, who's playing Balloon Man now? and the kids laugh about it now. They roast me over that moment. It was a horrible mom moment.
Amazing.
But yeah, I mean, I obviously did not follow the Harvard psychologist's guidance on that. You got to give us more. We cannot end on that.
Goodness.
Yeah. No.
All right. How about this? No, this is actually
Curious George. Yeah, that's where they were acting out a scene from the book. About Curious George. That was the book I was thinking of. Go ahead.
I like this one too. Expose children to lots of people. And they put a little parenthesis there. Expose children safely to lots of people.
Well,
and this is something I think probably most parents could do a little better at, because we do tend to kind of lead insular lives. And part of that's over concern for our kids. Part of that also is we kind of settle into a routine and we only see the same half a dozen people over and over again.
Right.
So help expanding your kids out, getting them out, introducing them to more different types of people.
Kids kind of grew up in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. So they were here a lot, exposed to a lot of my coworkers, our colleagues.
Yeah.
And then their dad was a police officer. So occasionally they'd go places with him and be exposed. I mean, there's always like gatherings and backyard barbecues and that kind of thing. So I feel like we did expose our kids a lot. And sometimes it was like past the child, because we both had to work. So we were just calling up friends and friends of friends and begging people. And it's like, how much we got to pay you? So, people we always knew and trusted. But I feel like we did, because of our full-time careers outside the house, we were always exposing our kids to a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, then that's a positive thing that you did for your kids.
Really?
So that'll pay dividends.
Anything else on that list?
Yeah. Also, teach them to copy you.
Oh, no.
So, rather than always trying to explain things, just, help them just mimic what you do.
So show them, for example, like you're making a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
You're cooking in the kitchen, but they're doing that. They're mimicking you, not mocking you. Maybe they're mocking you, but they're mimicking.
Yeah, you just teach them to copy you. And there's some nuance to this though, because children learn by watching, right, and by copying adults. And so you've got to also kind of bring your actions in line with what you want to see them do, because they're going to copy you. So if you want to make sure that you're being seen doing the things that you want them to emulate in the way that you want them to emulate it. So,
Ethan Millard, bringing in the list from a Harvard psychologist of the 7 things that we can do to raise kids with resilient brains.
And confirming once again that I am a terrible parent. At least substandard, if not.
Hey,
totally
your best friend in the newsroom is on the line with us next. We're going to dial up Alex Keery.
Love
because
it.
We've got a Jazz game tonight. We've got game 2 after game 1. Wow. Such a game. I'm so excited for game 2 tonight at Vivint Smart Home Arena. Alex, Ethan, and Deb. The band is all together, straight ahead.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.